From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special Pledge Drive episode of Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're revisiting some of our most memorable stories of the past year. Next up, we bring you a story about the intersection of incarceration and mental health. The pandemic has led to shifts in areas of society that have been historically resistant to change, like the criminal justice system. While prisons all over the country have been rightly criticized for failing to protect staff and inmates from infection, many local jails have been decarcerating at unprecedented levels. It's something that reform advocates have been calling for a long time and is intertwined with the goals of the Black Lives Matter movement that surged last year. Calls to defund the police got a lot of attention. But beyond that, protesters were demanding that law enforcement budgets be shifted to other services that need more funding, like education, social services, and mental health care. Right now, people with mental health issues tend to end up behind bars. We can see that because in 44 states, jails and prisons are the largest mental health care providers. And the largest mental health care facility in the country is the Twin Towers Jail in Los Angeles County. Residents there made a vote for change last November by passing Measure J. It will put hundreds of millions of dollars towards alternatives to incarceration. If it works, it could be a model for redirecting money from the police into other services. Reporter Andrew Stelzer has more.
The massive Twin Towers Jail is only a 20-minute drive from Antonieta Zuniga's house. She lives in Pico Rivera in southeast L.A. County.
I love all my grandkids and my kids, you know, but Carlos was very special for me since he born.
Antonieta's grandson, Carlos Jr., was born in 1993. In his early teens, he began exhibiting signs of schizophrenia, hearing voices and police sirens.
He was living with his mother when everything starts. He started like at 13, 14 years old.
By the time he turned 18, Carlos had been in and out of the hospital several times. The family really didn't know what to do, but his mom couldn't deal with it anymore. So grandma opened her doors.
And of course, you know, I was naive. I don't know nothing about mental illness until, you know, I saw so many strange things is when I said, wow.
Over the next 8 years, Antonieta learned a lot. Carlos would randomly move furniture around the house or use meth and disappear for days at a time. But she did her best to keep up.
It's very hard to handle a situation when you're not a doctor, when you're not a nurse. But he's very respectful with me. He loves me as much as I love him. And that helped us.
But in 2019, Carlos was on a streak of refusing to take his medication. And without that baseline, things became even more difficult.
In those 3 months, they take him into 7 different hospitals. They keep him only for 2 days, 3 days. They told me that they can keep him for no more time, you know, because the insurance don't allow them more time.
Then one day in November, things got a little bit scary. After 3 nights of no sleep, she smelled something burning. Carlos was lighting trash fires in the backyard, and he wouldn't respond to her questions. Antonieta felt like this was out of her league. So she picked up the phone.
I forgot totally. I forgot who to call. Okay? And that was my mistake.
Because she was so tired, she forgot about the mental health hotline numbers pinned up on her refrigerator. Instead, she dialed 911.
I called them for help, but they come like a SWAT. They come about 10 police cars and like a 20 or 25 persons. They make a big commotion, you know. I said, why are you gonna do that? You know, I just need him to get to the hospital. And they say, no, we don't gonna take him to the hospital. We're gonna take him to another place.
By other place, they meant the Twin Towers Jail. Antonieta says she feels guilty for being unprepared and making the phone call that set things in motion.
He don't deserve to go to prison. You know, he don't do nothing because he wants to do it. he's doing that because he's sick. But they got the gun, they got the badge. What can we do? All I can say, you know, don't shoot him, because in so many cases, you know.
You're probably bracing yourself for what comes next in Carlos's story. But in this case, there's good news. The tragic ending we've heard way too many times didn't come to pass.
Hello?
Hi, Carlos. It's Sarah.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Do you still feel like doing an interview today?
Yeah.
That's my reporting partner on this story, Sarah Short, talking to Carlos during the summer of 2020, almost a year after he was arrested.
How's it going?
Good, just watching YouTube.
And as you might be able to guess, they don't have YouTube in jail. It took more than 5 months and some help from his family, but Carlos found his way to a better situation. When the virus hit, LA released 5,000 people from jail, and he was part of that wave.
Yeah, the whole experience of being in jail, it was just scary for me, you know? Not knowing when I was going to get out, they ended up just sending me to a program.
Carlos is in a supportive housing facility where he has his own bedroom and a smartphone. He's allowed to smoke cigarettes. He sleeps a lot and doesn't really do too much in terms of rehab, but he takes his pills and stays safe. He has ambitions to one day be a video game programmer.
I look forward to having a job and going to school and chilling with my friends. I look forward to seeing my mom and seeing my dad. Just having a normal life, you know?
The longer Carlos stayed in jail, the more his chances at that normal life would have declined. Job prospects, housing opportunities, even life expectancy is lower for people who've been incarcerated. And it doesn't just affect them.
When one person is incarcerated, it's not just that one person. It's the entire family. It's their loved ones.
Diana Zuniga is a longtime community organizer in Los Angeles. She's also Carlos's cousin.
For our family, we've had multiple people incarcerated, so the impact of that on the generations after them has been really felt.
Diana's father has been locked up for most of her life. Carlos's father has also been in and out of prison.
Many of our loved ones, especially the men in our family, have been incarcerated, and some of them have been diagnosed with mental health needs or trauma issues, and it was hard for my family to then see the next generation of men go through similar things. And, you know, that next generation was my cousin Carlitos.
That personal experience has driven much of Diana's activism, which is focused on creating community-based alternatives to incarceration. Carlos's housing situation is one example. She helped him find his way through the system into a more humane environment.
It's really seeking to look at how we can give that person care in the community as opposed to incarceration at every point in the system.
Diana admits revamping the entire structure is a big task. Los Angeles's criminal legal system is massive, but progress is being made.
In LA County, we have about 280 judges on any given day who are hearing criminal matters.
Peter Espinoza is a former judge himself at the LA County Superior Court. When he stepped down from the bench back in 2016, he says around 30% of judges' calendars involved inmates in mental health housing inside jail.
And there was virtually no resources available to judges who are looking for a way to care for individuals without keeping them in the jail or sending them to prison.
To be clear, there is mental health care inside LA jails. Remember, Twin Towers Jail, where Carlos Zuniga was held, is advertised as the largest mental health treatment center in the entire United States. But
you can't get well in a cell.
People with mental illness are the so-called frequent flyers of the system. Their untreated behaviors land them in and back out of jail again and again.
The jail is overcrowded. The clinicians who are trying desperately to care for ill people in the jail are understaffed, under-resourced.
Espinoza took a job directing the newly created Office of Diversion and Reentry, or ODR. ODR's aim is to create a web of other options for people with mental health or substance abuse issues. That includes sentencing alternatives, drug treatment, and perhaps most importantly, housing.
We make a commitment to them that we will house them for life.
I just want to make sure you heard that.
We will house them for life.
ODR's program pulls homeless people with a serious mental health disorder out of jail and puts them into housing with medication and services, if necessary, for the rest of their lives. Espinoza says the cost is about $40,000 a year per person. It costs more than five times as much to care for them in jail.
Many of these people will not require housing for life, but some of them will. Some of them will so that they don't return to homelessness, so that they don't return to untreated mental health, untreated mental illness, and the cycle begins.
In the first 5 years or so, ODR has taken more than 6,000 people out of jail and put them into community services. And the early results are pretty promising. A RAND Corporation study found after a year in the program, 71% of people stayed in ODR housing, with a recidivism rate of only 14%.
Those are remarkable numbers for recidivist behavior.
And his office isn't operating alone. Under a new countywide philosophy of care first, jail last, a progressive board of supervisors is working on plans to close a jail. County agencies across the board are being reshaped to help keep people out of the criminal legal system. Then, in November, LA voters elected a new progressive district attorney and approved Measure J.
Vote yes on Measure J.
Because we believe that racial justice is healthcare. Racial justice is housing. And racial justice means care, not incarceration.
The measure requires at least 10% of the county's general fund to be spent on community investment and alternatives to incarceration. That could end up being upwards of $500 million a year. And none of that money can go to law enforcement. Instead, it can fund the kind of program that's kept Carlos Zuniga out of jail. His cousin Diana says the public's appetite for change surged in 2020. The coronavirus seemed to spark some long-absent compassion.
People really witnessing how COVID-19 is taking the life of so many people and how that is actually then happening within jails, prisons, and detention centers. And finally, there's this connection of health and justice that organizers have been lifting up for a long time.
When the pandemic hit, it jump-started ideas that were already working their way through the system.
This is a pivotal moment around health and justice concerns that people can't ignore anymore.
That unexpected rush of political will, along with funds generated by Measure J, could keep that momentum rolling in a post-pandemic world.
Thanks to Andrew Stelzer for that story. It comes to us from KALW Radio. It was edited by Lisa Morehouse and co-reported by Sarah Short. The reporting was supported by the National Geographic Society's Emergency Journalist Fund and the Pulitzer Center. If you'd like to support more work like this, it's pretty easy. Become a member of your public radio station. Here's how.